Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life.
Good afternoon and welcome to Namaste Radio. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is such a pleasure to be back. Now that we're not doing the weekly shows anymore, I've missed you, so I'm happy to be here. And thank you so much for tuning in, whether you're live or on podcast. Hello, I hope that you're having a wonderful day. And today we have a very special guest. Constance Kello is the founder of Namaste Publishing. She is also author of The Leap. And when this month we are talking about new beginnings at Namaste Publishing, and I think that Constance has a really interesting perspective on new beginnings as she has experienced so many herself. Welcome to the show, Constance.
Oh, wonderful to be on it again with you, Marie.
Thank you so much. So, first of all, I mean, what is new beginnings mean to you? When we talk about new beginnings from a Namaste perspective, what does that bring up for you?
I think I missed, you cut out, you said, what is new beginning, and then I missed the rest. What is the question, Marie?
From a Namaste Publishing perspective, what does new beginnings mean to you?
Well, I think new beginnings means a new step forward in your growth in consciousness. Consciousness is causative. That is what creates. And so to have any new beginning, you're going to have to come from a level of consciousness that fosters a higher growth within yourself, which will then be reflected in the reality you experience.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. And so, Constance, you before you started Namaste Publishing, you were a school teacher, and then you were working as a management consultant. And so you had some new beginnings along the way throughout your career. But then what happened when you met Eckhart and he asked you to be his publisher? I mean, that must have been a really new beginning for you.
Well, it was and it wasn't, because throughout my life, I was just following the cues that life gave me. And ironically, you know, I wasn't trained as a teacher, and yet I was hired to be a teacher. I just followed an instinct to apply for a teaching position once I had graduated from McGill. And as I was on the bus heading down Sherbrooke to my appointment venue, it crossed my mind, why am I doing this? I'm applying for a teaching position and I'm not trained in teaching. Yet I went ahead, went through the interview. I was well received, received well enough that they made room for me as a teacher at a high school in Montreal, even though I didn't have a teaching background. And apparently there was some kind of crack in their policy that would allow them to do this in maybe, you know, 2% of the situations. So my first teaching experience was at a high school called James Ling in the Saint-Henri district of Montreal, which, if you know Montreal, is the slum area. And obviously, as a new teacher, and as one really not even qualified to teach, I was thrown wherever they could put me, and that's where I ended up. And it was an unbelievably challenging yet beautiful year, because the young people that went to that school were indeed impoverished, you know, financially. They were impoverished in terms of the families that they came from. And they were impoverished within themselves in that they didn't believe they could really rise and do things. And the teachers at that school, on the whole, never even talked about university. Some didn't even talk about the students graduating. They had very, very low expectations. So when I went there, it was very difficult, because they were a tough group, and I was physically kind of elbowed and threatened the first day. And I remember coming home and threw myself on the bed and telling my husband, I just can't go back. I just can't go back. Of course I did. At the end of the year, there was a transformation that had taken place within my homeroom and within the other students I taught. And I could leave the room. They would be quiet. They would be studying. And the reason was my whole life purpose, no matter whether I've been a high school teacher at James Ling in Montreal, or teaching at Vancouver Community College, or being a department head there, or being a management consultant, or a publisher, or a author, and now kind of founder of Namaste Global Community, the work that I do may have a different form, but it's always been Namaste. Whatever I have been doing, I've wanted people to really discover the divinity within themselves and their inestimable worth, regardless of what outer circumstances they may be experiencing at that time. So I brought that to James Ling, and those students responded to what I saw in them. And I didn't keep in touch, but when I left, their aspirations were to complete high school and to go on to university, at least many of them. So that was a beginning. And as I grew in my experiences in the world and with people, and grew in consciousness, the form in which I did my work changed. And always the sphere of influence that I had increased as I grew in my own consciousness. And there's a beautiful prayer, and I pray it quite often. It's the Abba's prayer, and it's, you know, O Lord, bless me indeed, expand my service territory, may your hand always be with me, may you keep me from evil, and may I not cause pain. And in the Bible, this was said to be the perfect prayer. Service uttered by Yabaz, and he was blessed indeed, and so his service territory expanded. So initially I had a classroom and some other classes to teach. That was my sphere of influence. When I moved on to Vancouver Community College, I had a number of classes to teach, and then when I became department head, I also had a larger sphere of influence. As a management consultant, my sphere of influence grew, because I was dealing with corporations and affiliate corporations and all the people within them. As a publisher, again, the sphere of influence grew, because look at the millions of people that we have reached through our publications. So it just goes on and on. So to me, new beginnings are a result of one's growth in consciousness.
Beautiful. That's so amazing, Constance. And so I'm curious, it seems like there's been some bravery happening. I mean, when you applied for the teaching job and you weren't qualified as a teacher, what was it that drew you to teaching? Why did you decide to apply for the job in the first place?
Well, I was out of university. I didn't have a job. I don't know. I looked at an ad, and I was just prompted to respond. And over and over again, Marie, it's been like a case of this fool rushes in where angels fear to tread. At Vancouver Community College, I was a very young teacher, one of the youngest when I was hired. I was the first female and the youngest department chairman ever, and that was of the English department. And I was elected to that position when I was 6 months pregnant.
Wow.
So I guess I've always been a pioneer in things. I'm an Aries, a triple fire sign, actually, and so I'm always trying to kind of tread new territory. And has there been fear along the way? Absolutely. But I won't let that stop me. As a matter of fact, I have no credit to be given for not being stopped by fear, because for me, the worst thing would be not to grow and not to expand my experiences and outreach. So that's more fearful to me than being stopped by, kind of the external fear of, oh, am I going to fail? Am I going to make it? What if I fall flat on my face? And I learned very early that, if you fall flat on your face, that's fine. At least you're going in the right direction. So when Eckhart asked me to be his publisher, it was, I've never done that, but, as a management consultant, I go into industries I don't know anything about. One of them that stands out for me is the cement industry. Like, what do I know about cement? So you learn about cement. That's what it is. And when you go into, different organizations, whether they're retail organizations, regulated government corporations, foundations, manufacturing, the form, again, is different, but the substance of how to meet with success through people in the workplace is the same. So you do have to kind of learn about something. So when Eckhart asked me to be his publisher, did it come as a surprise? Absolutely. Because up until that time, I had just asked him to lead meditation sessions in my downtown management consulting office. And we had become very close, during that time, because there was such a special, teacher-student relationship, if you want to put it in kind of that traditional way of speaking. And the level of, we just grew every week. I mean, I could almost take a measuring stick and see, the shift that took place in consciousness week by week as we were being tutored, in consciousness by Eckhart. So, I just got two books on self-publishing, and fortunately I had a good year in terms of my management consulting practice, so I did have the capital to invest in putting out a first-class book in terms of, hiring good graphic people and editorial micro help and that kind of thing. So there wasn't any compromise in terms of putting that kind of investment into the book, as well as, the personal investment of working with Eckhart very, very intimately on The Power of Now. So,
wonderful.
And we didn't know, we were both compelled to do this. I believe life is one big setup, and within the one big setup. There are other setups, and this was a setup because I believe both Eckhart and myself contracted to meet at that particular time to do this particular work in the world. And so once I got over, again, you know, the fear came up, oh, can I do it? I've never done it before. What if I, you know, disappoint Eckhart, da, da, da. But again, it didn't take long before I crossed the bridge, both literally the Lionsgate Bridge and the bridge inside that said, let's go for it. And that was the beginning of an amazing service, I guess, to humanity, that both the power of now and the new earth have reached millions throughout the planet, and also that it was a catalyst for me to continue to publish other books that are highly conscious in nature. They're very evolved in their content in terms of a consciousness point of view, whether they're talking about trauma release or balancing your brain or conscious health or my book, The Leap. It's all about bringing consciousness into the written form so we are able to support through that means the new consciousness that is pressing to emerge on planet Earth right now and probably throughout our solar system and maybe the cosmos, who knows. But that's the way that, you know, we are being of service. And the leap is about this pivotal time on the planet where we must make a leap in consciousness in order to continue as a species.
So, Constance, it sounds like you're saying that at this time in our reality and our civilization, we're being pushed to this tipping point where we have no choice but to take that
leap. Well, we have a choice. We have a choice because the leaping consciousness that is necessary for humanity to go to the higher level of being, which is to break out of duality, which is ego-based and fear-driven, to the higher reality of our true self, which is spiritual and limitless, we need to participate in and work towards through stepping up our spiritual practices, although we're getting a lot of help from unseen, you know, helpers. But we must participate in that. And it's the first time within the history of humanity where percentage of humanity is sufficiently conscious to consciously co-create this new reality, which is truth. It's like the leap is a leap from this current level of consciousness, which we know what it is about, to a higher level of consciousness. And it's also a leap out of delusion into the spiritual reality of who we are. It's not predetermined. It's in potential. And that's why I wrote the book, The Leap, that we have this opportunity, and there is no doubt we can make the leap, but we have to do certain things. And the leap is one from separation consciousness to unity consciousness.
And so, Constance, with more people becoming conscious on the planet, does that mean that not everyone has to sign up for that, but yet once it reaches a state, a critical mass, that do you believe that we will all reach that level, or is it still going to be the people who only consciously choose to make that leap?
That's an excellent question, and I really don't know the answer. I do know that people, you may call them light workers or what's another word? Anyway, who have been working at developing their own consciousness and working in service to assist others to grow in consciousness, that is making it a lot easier for others to move very quickly along that spectrum to higher consciousness. There's no doubt about it. Because of these light warriors, these light workers, and I've heard a figure that there needs to be 144,000 on the planet in order for that critical mass of consciousness to pull so many more very, very quickly into a higher level of consciousness. So many, many will be the beneficiary of the work of early pioneers in working to elevate human consciousness individually and on a larger scale. But here's an indication. Have you heard of David Hawkins? He is the father of modern kinesiology, and mm-hmm. he has developed a scale of consciousness that goes from 1 to 1,000. And below 200 is the level of unconsciousness. Anyone who is at a level of below 200 is negative, is anti-life. They're living a false reality, and they're universally experiencing, and contributing to destruction. And so, Marie, when we say, oh, my God, I just don't understand, I can't understand how people can torture others. I can't understand how people can plot in a sinister way against creating illness on the planet. And that we can't understand it because we are not at that level of consciousness. But if you're below the level of 200, it makes perfect sense because you have no social conscience. You are there to exploit and use for your own purposes. So when we look at some of these tyrants that have become leaders, and we can't understand what motivates them and how they can do what they do, because we're not there, but they are at a lower level of consciousness. So as David Hawkins talks about this scale, he also, said that the level of consciousness of mankind stayed for 190, or for centuries, at 190 on that scale of 1 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. For centuries, and then suddenly, in 1986, it jumped across the critical line from falsehood to integrity and onto its current level of 207. And I find it really interesting that that happened in 1986 and that the harmonic convergence in Sedona, Arizona, happened in 1987. So maybe that level of consciousness that we jumped to in 1986 of 207 enabled the harmonic convergence to take place and embed on planet Earth higher consciousness. I did also read recently that humanity as a whole has now fallen back to 204. And the reason given by people who follow Hawkins today is that the media is so influential mm-hmm. and prevalent in our lives, and that at least 50% of it is false. But Hawkins, we took in a workshop, my husband and I, took in a workshop that was supposed to be David Hawkins' last official public workshop. We don't know if that is the case. We hoped it wasn't. But at that time, he indicated that, and that was just, 8 months ago, that 78% of humans still calibrate below the level of 200, and only 22% calibrate above 200. And it's this 22% that are holding up the rest of humanity. But the power of one person who calibrates at above the 540 level, which is the unconditional level, it's the power of that one person can counterbalance the consciousness of 750,000 people who calibrate below 200. That's how important you are. That's how important it is to raise our consciousness. It's up to us, and we can do it, and we know how to do it.
Constance, I'm curious what your opinion is about these people who are vibrating at a level below 200, living in negativity, feeding off the pain
mm-hmm.
and whatever of
people. Well,
you see,
I don't know if they're going to be able to make the leap, regardless. So will all of humanity make it if we make it? I don't know. That's a question. Will humanity have to go through such turmoil, such catastrophes that millions, you know, leave the planet and allow for the work of the more conscious to have a greater effect? I don't know, Marie. These are questions I don't know.
I'm curious, Constance, if you think that perhaps there's a place for, I tend to believe that everything happens for a reason, and so these people who are in positions of power that are creating a lot of pain on the planet,
right.
Is it possible that they're there to act as a catalyst for further growth?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because all quantum leaps in evolution from the time of the Big Bang, which was 14 billion years ago, has been crisis-driven. Quantum transitions in terms of evolution are nature's traditions. And so crisis is the evolutionary driver for these leaps. And are we in crisis now? Absolutely. Are we ready for an evolutionary leap? Absolutely. Do we need it? Well, don't even have to answer that.
Well,
you know,
look
at what must have happened in terms of evolution. So human life began 2.6 million years ago on the planet, and we went through many iterations, you know, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, da-da-da-da-da, till we reached the Homo sapien level, and within that level there's been other levels. But imagine, in terms of evolution, what crisis must have happened to force many sea creatures to land. You know, that must have been an amazing crisis. That was part of evolution. It forced land creatures. And, of course, without that, there would never have been Homo sapiens to follow, you know, later on down the road. Also, at one time on our planet, oxygen was a poisonous gas. And cells needed to protect themselves from oxygen. Now, through that crisis, which was felt at the cellular level, through this threat, there was a mutation. And the chlorophyll molecule came into being, which gave rise to photosynthesis, which uses oxygen for life-giving, not life-threatening purposes. Amazing! Quantum. But when you look back, the evolutionary path has been always to a higher order of harmony and complexity and unity. So we're at that place again. Here's an opportunity to make a quantum leap from our current state of what I call egoic illusion that we are separate beings that need to fight and defend ourselves against others, that there is a finite level of resources, and we need to get our share, to the fact that we are all one, and that there is an infinite supply of everything. So this unity consciousness is what we're moving towards, and there's so many good indications that we're breaking through on the planet. As the what you find, you know, at times of crisis is threat as well as opportunity. So you find the two polarities very, very strong. And, you know, I think this has been reflected just so overtly in the American elections for their president and the split of people in terms of, you know, in their political system. It's almost like 50-50 when you look at population, not at, you know, the electoral seats that decide things. So we're experiencing duality. It's just in our face. So the good news is that we're starting to see the evidence of the evolution of consciousness. I mean, you can no longer hide as easily what you are doing that is deleterious to other human beings. We have WikiLeaks. Oh, my God. That is an amazing thing that has happened. We see what's happening in the Middle East and how there is this movement of intolerance of tyrannical leaders anymore and a move towards wanting to have the freedom of human expression and human dignity, which they would call a democratic kind of lifestyle. Amazing. Politicians I see now are getting a little more transparent, a little more authentic, because their heels are being held to the fire through the internet. Truth will out. And with the awareness of what's really going on, then people will be moving for, you know, the higher order and having an intolerance for that negative energy, that darkness.
And actually, it was interesting when Eckhart was on Namaste Radio, he actually advised people who do want to contribute to the greater consciousness of the planet to get involved in politics, because it tends to be the people who are more shady and will do the undercutting everyone else to kind of get into the position of power. And so he encourages people who want to make a positive change in the world not to avoid politics, but to get involved.
Well, see, on that I disagree with Eckhart, because I think our systems, political, financial, many of the social systems, many of the religious systems are old, they're ossified, they are of the old consciousness, they are coming down. So I would not advise people to go into politics. I would advise people to find an alternative to the political systems that exist now, which are nationalistic based. They are collectively based also, like the UN, or not the UN, but NATO and OPEC countries and all of that. That is still part of the old system. We have to move towards a new order, which is global in nature, that is fair to all humanity. What that looks like, we don't know, because it's new. We've never experienced it before, but we have to be open to it. So rather than feed and try and make changes within the old structures, I do believe that we have to step out and be open to creating new ways of working with one another. It was Henry David Thoreau that said that government is best which governs least. So we need less government, and we need more freedom and say by the populace movement. It's movement to populism. It's about people. It's about what the people really want. And now how can the world come up with a way of organizing all of humanity? I have no idea. But out of this chaos will come some new order. I truly believe that. Within chaos, there is order. Everything has to be disrupted and get up before it can fall into a new place. So, I would disagree with Eckhart on that. I would say be a critic of the political systems that aren't working, support the elements in certain systems that are, and push for a better way, because I really don't see the solutions coming out of the old. Einstein has been quoted so often on, you can't solve a problem on the level that it was created. So the leap is, once we start thinking living, acting on the belief that we are all one, then we will come up with a way in which we can bring a way to be all one and keep our diversity, because oneness doesn't mean sameness. Sameness is sameness. Diversity allows for unity. When you come together in your diversity, then you have unity. But there has to be an appreciation and an honoring and an embracing of the diversity to have this unity consciousness. And we know we're one. I mean, it's indisputable. Science has proven it over and over again. We have 7 trillion cells in our body. You change one, you change them all. You know, I can sneeze and some hat will blow off in Japan. The butterfly effect, everybody's heard of that. So it's a truism. Like, and we keep acting as if it's not. How insane is that? How insane is that? We cannot separate ourselves from the pain that people have felt in Japan. We cannot separate ourselves from the trauma and the fear that people are experiencing in the Middle East and in other places on the planet that are going through, you know, tremendous challenge, because we are one with them. So what we do in this instance is we don't allow ourselves to be drawn into that collective pain body, which is now a global pain body, but we observe and we pray and we bless everyone on the planet. And that means we bless everyone. We bless the tyrants as well. We pray for them as well. There's no, in higher consciousness, there's no judgment. That has to go by the way. We see, we acknowledge. It doesn't mean that we condone the actions, but that person is a human being and they are unconscious. And so we have to have compassion for those who are unconscious. And that is going to help elevate and assist them in becoming conscious, if anything will. You know, it's been said that compassion, understanding, is the most powerful force in the universe. And perhaps that's why the Dalai Lama says, compassion is my religion. So we need to get into being radical in our spiritual practices, radical in our forgiveness, radical in our understanding of others. Don't judge or condemn. What comes out of that? Observe, because then we get into the polarities, good and bad. If we don't like what we're seeing, let us dwell on the good. Let us bless. Let us send compassion. And do it collectively, because when two or more are gathered, the benefit is logarithmic. It's a multiplier effect. 1 + 4 = 50. And more you're seeing people asking others to join with them in a noble intention and in a prayer time and in praying for world peace. And that is the response that's the kind of response we have to come up with to the things that we're seeing on the planet right now that are quite horrendous.
And so, Constance, I'm curious, yesterday you mentioned that oneness is not sameness, and I was having a conversation with someone yesterday who is quite religious and has very strong beliefs in their religion, which I totally respect, and we were having the conversation about the fact that if I don't believe, then I must surely be going to hell. And it must mean that everyone else who is not that religion is also going to hell. And my question for that person and my question for you is it possible that many of our beliefs, even though they're different, can all be true?
Yes, but when you talk, and that's one of the sad things about religion, is that it is based on separation thinking. My religion is better than yours. I am right. And if I am right and you don't believe what I believe, then you are wrong. That is the world of duality. That is the world we must break out of. And there has to be a belief that we can evolve to a higher consciousness. There's evidence of that. We know that. Yes, the nature of evolution is for form to move to a higher state of complexity and awareness. And we have many examples of those who have already made this leap, of spiritual masters and saints. You know, we call this level the level of enlightenment. You know, I personally know a number of awakened beings, and many, many more are awakening every day than ever before in the history of humanity. Many are having satoris, are entering states of samadhi, which are short experiences of the awakened state, which I believe are harbingers of the permanent state that we are hopefully going to be leaping to. Now, let's go back to your question about this person. And we recently were down in the States, in Virginia, and there are a lot of different Christian faiths down there, or sects, or divisions. And we experienced a lot of what you're talking about. And wherever that person is, they have found some truth. But that truth is still based on what I would call the reality we have to leave behind, because it is based on separation thinking. And we cannot continue in that way. And the very fact that many religions, you know, foster a separation of men and women in terms of worth and what they can contribute and how they can participate within the schematic of their religious belief, that alone, is an indicator that it's based on separation. And so that's what has to go. And I, too, I just honor where people are, and that's where they are. And I have to kind of focus on what I need to do in the now, and just take that responsibility and allow other people to be where they are.
Beautifully said. And because that's the thing, as soon as we get into the discussion about
you
whether they're
discuss.
Right to think
that's
that
my,
way.
As soon as you get into discussion, there's no winning, because it's of the mind. It's not of the spirit. It's not driven by the intelligence of the heart, which always speaks about acceptance, understanding, oneness, honoring. Just don't fall into the trap. Listen and send blessings to the person.
And the thing that I find so interesting about religion is that so much of it is based on what happens after we're gone rather than the moment that we have now, because none of us know for sure what's going to happen when this state of existence ends, but we do know that in this moment we definitely have the now.
Well, you see, again, that's what you're absolutely right. We got into past and future because we are living in a world of duality, and we are bound in this world of duality by time and space. So we get involved in our little territories, we get in our and our belief territories, not just physical territories and nations and that kind of thing, but we also get caught in this continuum of time, which really doesn't exist. The past doesn't exist, the future doesn't exist, just now exists. But in the world of duality, where nothing changes, really, I mean, the news isn't the news, Marie, you turn it on, it's the same old thing.
Mm-hmm.
You go back and you watch World War II, same old, same old. I watched, what was it, Gladiator the other night. Oh, my God, same story over and over and over again, because we are stuck in this world of duality where nothing changes. In the world of duality, we experience inertia. Things remain the same. There are three main inertias. We see conflict and war over and over and over again. We witness cellular aging, disease, and death over and over and over again. We're trapped in the local solar system because we believe we cannot move faster than light. Einstein, if he lived long enough, would have broken out of that. We are locked within the belief that we are bound by time and space, but we have evidence, absolute evidence from quantum physics, that there is another substratum of existence. This is so exciting. And I discovered this, you know, after I wrote The Leap, of course, because everything is evolving and things are coming to light. We live in a world bound by time and space. Einstein, when he presented his theory of relativity, E equals mc squared in 1955, says nothing travels faster than the speed of light, which, you know, travels pretty fast, 186,000 miles per second. Wow. But the speed of light is not instant. It is still within duality and meets resistance. Otherwise, there would be no, there would be instant travel and no limitation of things moving over distance. So, you know, how did we get here? We can go back to the Bible, and it was the knowledge of good and evil. We were told, or Adam and Eve were told, not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because as soon as they had the knowledge of good and evil, they created the world of duality with all of its limitations. So we have this, oh, it's so exciting, we have this experiment that was conducted at the University of Paris in 1982 called the Alaine Experience. Everyone, you know, who's interested in quantum physics and the new sciences knows about this, about the findings of quantum mechanics called quantum entanglement or quantum non-local connection. Einstein couldn't understand this, and he called it spooky action at a distance. And the principle is that what they found is that subatomic particles, such as electrons and protons, are able to instantly connect. And instantly means beyond the speed of light, with no limitation. They can communicate with each other, regardless of the distance separating them, instantly. So there is no limit to time. Time is not time, because you can go. It's not an impediment. Even the speed of light that Einstein, you know, discovered and quantified is not real. It is part of duality. it's really exciting that one of Einstein's, I guess you call him colleagues, Paul Dirac, came across something accidentally. Paul Dirac won the Nobel Prize in physics, I think, in the 1930s sometime. And he wrote a paper called The Accidental Discovery, which we've just rediscovered. At the time when he put this paper out amongst the, you know, the physicists and scientists of the world, they poo-pooed it because they couldn't understand it. They were still within the framework of duality, of limitation, of light being only able to travel so fast. And so it was just put on the shelf. And it wasn't until recently that the scientific community, now having some religious reference to put this within also, took it off the shelf and said, oh my God. What Dirac discovered was a whole new substratum of existence where there was no duality. Imagine. There was no duality. We have duality. Our DNA has a double helix, which has negative and positive built into it. That's why we have those main inertias I spoke to you about earlier. But there is a place which he called the sea of negative energy, which is a sea of infinite supply of energy, where there's no positive and negative. Everything is just negative. Here, every pair of opposites are not opposites because they're singular. They're all negative charged particles that spin counterclockwise. There's no resistance. So in the substratum of singularity, which is a level of consciousness of existence, there's no time and distance because there's no inertia, there's no resistance to slow down things. So that's why when I pray to Archangel Michael, he's here. And when 50,000 other people pray to Archangel Michael around the planet, he's there at the same time. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Constance, we're just about out of time here, and I'm wanting to bring up David, the editorial director of Namaste, is in the chat room right now, and he reminded me of the teaching of the thin red line about us all being one. And
do you want me to read you that?
Yes,
oh,
please.
David, bless you. Okay, I've got the leap in front of me. Just a minute, let me find that.
Thank you so much. And stick around at the end of the show. I'm just going to give Constance a moment to find that. But I'm also
I've got it. Here.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And at the end of the show, I'm going to play a song by a local musician, Surya, because it's a beautiful song. So go ahead, Constance.
Okay. So in the leap, I say that the leap that we need to take is one in consciousness. And I say, let me illustrate the kind of leap that is entailed. And I'm now reading from the book. The Thin Red Line is a movie about the realities of combat in the South Pacific during the Second World War. In one scene, a soldier is surveying a field after the Battle of Guadalcanal. He is stunned by the grim carnage. Many of his comrades, some dead, some with gaping wounds, still others writhing in their limbless bodies in excruciating pain, are strewn on the ground like fodder for vultures. Some pitch in to help the survivors, others stand or sit, stunned by the horror of what has just happened, their faces showing the shock at such insanity. As the narrating and witnessing soldier looks at his surviving comrades, he says, maybe we only have one big soul that everyone is part of. Each face the same man, like one big self. Each one looking for salvation on their own, like coals thrown from the fire. So the soldier's words here pierce to the heart of our human tragedy. Our inability to solve our world's problems and our refusal to do so is due to our failure to see that we are all part of one big self. Instead, we are trapped in the belief that we are each separate individuals, pieces of coal thrown from the fire. There.
Hmm.
That's it.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Constance.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight. You can tell I get excited about this kind of thing.
Definitely. Well, we're going to have you on again to talk more specifically about the leap, because today we were talking about new beginnings, and it's been, I mean, the leap is all about the new reality and new beginnings, but I want to talk in the future more specifically about that. But what about...
Well, yes, what, you know, what I'd love to share is, like, what do we need to do to make the leap?
Exactly.
What are our actions? Like, it's absolutely doable. It's in our hands. It's a piece of cake if we just do what we need to do. It's a given. Mm-hmm. But again, I said it's in potential and it's not predetermined. So one of the things, you know, and I think these things are peppered throughout the books that we publish, is what we need to be doing at this particular time of unbelievable opportunity for our species to make sure that we move into that new existence of singularity, of ease, of celestial peace. And I wrote a blog which I shared. I had a brief experience of this. I know this reality exists. So, namaste, everybody.
Beautiful. And before we close the show, is there anything that you'd like to add?
No, I think because it would just start kind of a whole new conversation.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us, Constance. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you.
Okay.
Be well.
Blessings
namaste.
All. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Constance Kello. She is the founder of Namaste Publishing, author of The Leap, and also founder of the Namaste Global Community. If you're interested in joining the Namaste Global Community, it is a free community where you can connect with other like-minded individuals and collaborate and contribute to the collective uplifting of the planet. NamastePublishing.com is where you can find that. And I'm going to close the show with a song by local Vancouver musician Surya. You can find her on MySpace at myspace.com/thesuryasound. And here is her song, The Grateful Song. Be well. Take care. Namaste.
With everybody searching just like me, it's easy to see how life is filled with impossibility. Running from faith, looking for an escape is oh so easy. Look around and I am thankful for existence today, and I'm grateful for where my life is at in this moment. Oh, for all the things I have, I would like to say that I am grateful for today. I am grateful for today.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.